would like for today to probably be the last day that we'll spend on Modi Mixos. We are essentially only a Modi Mixos of the Sugya because there is quite a lot to talk about. One could easily spend months talking about it, but
years,
that's also true. But we decided to, well, years would probably be a little bit extreme, but we could certainly spend months talking about it. So we decided to be Modi Mixos rather than be Kofar HaKol. We don't want to skip everything about it, so we try to get a little bit of a sense of it. And together with that, hopefully today, we'll also talk a little bit about the related and companion sugya of Halach, which you could still use some Ar Makomos on, so maybe I'll give you some extra Makoros on that tomorrow, so you can look inside at some of what we will talk about presumably today. Okay, so we should start by revisiting what we ended off with yesterday, because we rushed because of the clock, so just get into a little bit more clarity. So we've been discussing the whole question of what this concept of modem mixus means. Right, this idea that I'm better off if I completely deny any debt. If I'm completely kofar hakol, so then I am pater to pay, motzi mechaver olav haraya, but I'm also pater from a shvua. If I am only can acknowledge part of it, if I'm modi b'miktos, so then I'm in worse trouble. So then I have to take a shvua. Apparently I did minat Torah. I have to take a shvua minat Torah in order to clear myself. And the question is, we discussed a little bit the past few days, why is that the case? And why would I have thought otherwise? And why would I have thought otherwise? We discussed a little bit the possibility that maybe a modem mixah should be considered to be a meshiv aveda, and the possibility of Tosfos and other Rishonim that it's a type of migo, that I should be credited with a better claim that I could have used, that I'm not chayim anything. Then we discussed a little bit what seems to be a machlokus Rishonim. Any question about that?
Well, in terms of how to put, in Rashi Bava Kama, where he says why we don't say modem mixes, where we don't say believe modem mixes, seems to be he's employing the svara of migo also without saying it. And he said the reason I don't believe.
Well, it's a reverse. It's the husband, why Rashi Bava Kama says why you are pater for kofar hakol.
Yeah, but then in saying that he also says why it wouldn't be believed for modem mixes.
Why we don't say that modem mixes?
Is it the end that both Tosfos and Rashi both say the reason why you do not say your patimot
makes sense
because you don't have
migo? Not exactly. I mean, the Gemara essentially seems to say that pretty much, that the havamina of migo is destroyed by the ha'aza component. The difference between Rashi and Tosfos, the way we've been focusing on it, is that Rashi and Bava Kama, right over here it's the havamina, here in Rashi and Bava Metzia, it's the havamina of what it would have been. And in terms of why there actually is a p'tur for a kofar hakol, so Rashi and Bava Kama focuses on the Ha'azah component, and Tosfos focuses on the Gzeres HaKasav component. I'll mention parenthetically, while we're talking about that, an interesting side issue that could emerge from that question. And we'll come back to this point today as well. How do these ideas and these svaras, how do they apply in other areas of halacha? I'll give you an example. The Beis Shmuel and Eben Ezer discusses a situation where you have a woman claims to a man, she makes a paternity claim. She says that she has a child, and she claims that he's the father. And he denies it. So the Beis Shmuel records in Din that he is neman to deny it. The Torah essentially gives the father the credibility to identify his children, to identify who's the Bechor, who's not the Bechor, to identify his children. So therefore, if the father denies, or the alleged father denies the paternity, so then he is believed. And the Beis Shmuel quotes this from the Rivash, that even if it was known that the two had a relationship, he's still believed, because it could be that she also had a relationship with other men as well, so it doesn't necessarily prove that it's his. And the Rivash goes on to say that essentially, therefore, he is free of all obligation, and he certainly doesn't have to support the child, because the Torah believes him, and therefore we don't put anything upon him. The Torah has given him the emunus, and therefore we don't even make him take any shvua, even on a level midrabah. So Mishlo Melech, in Hilchos Nachlus, Mishlo Melech asks a question on this. What question could you ask on that statement to the Beis Shmuel, the Ribash, really? So, therefore what?
Therefore, should have the...
Well, it's actually not actually Motiv Mixas, it's more like Kofar Bakal.
But if he says that he had a relationship with her, saying that no, because it's possible she had a relationship with someone else, it's at least a name the fact that he had a relationship.
So that's an interesting question. That'll come back to whether or not that has any comparison. But like the truth is, that probably is the first question that would come to mind. And maybe we'll come back to that later after seeing some other things. But the question of Mishlo Melech asks is actually a different thing. That when it comes to Kofar Hakal, Kofar Bakal, so then such a person we know is also Pater, but we don't hesitate to put on a Shua de Rabbana. Right? We have a concept called Shua Tessis, which we haven't really discussed too much, but we know that there is, at least on a rabbinical level, a Shua on a Kofar Bakal. But there are times when we do feel there is a need for a little bit extra there. So why don't we just say the same objection that the Rivash has? That, oh, if the Torah gave him that manas, therefore there's no need to go any further and even put on a shvua de Rabban. That's a question the Mishnah Melech asks. So what possible answer could you give to that question? Because the answer may depend on this Machlokas Rishonim. Is the premise true? Does the Torah really give the Kofar Bakal Nehmanis? Aaron? So I think it's...
It's not necessarily logical why I believe him.
Correct. So I think, or that's one way of putting it, but even just take it a little bit further, is that if you use Rashi's Svara of Ha'azah, so then essentially we're saying we believe him, which is the same thing as saying the Torah credits him because it's a Din Min HaTorah. So then that's what we're saying, that we believe him. But according to Tosfos's focus, that it's the Gzeris HaKasav, that we have a pasuk that tells you that a Moedim HaMikzas is Chayiv in the Shul. And that pasuk is limited to Moedim HaMikzas and doesn't extend to Kofar Bakal, so then it's not really true that we believe Davka the Kofar Bakal. We just don't obligate him on a Torah level in the Shul. But that doesn't necessarily pose any reason for a Chazal not to put a Shul on. In other words, maybe it's fundamentally different than the situation with the father and his son, where the Torah actually grants him real credibility. Maybe in this case, we're not granting genuine credibility. So it happens to be that that chiluk is discussed by our friend Rav Nosson Gishtet, Lernes Chuvas Lahoris Nosson, Chelik Zion. But presumably, it's totally on the machlokas. He just says that that's the difference. That when it comes to the son, there's ne'amanas of the Torah, and when it comes to Kofar HaKol, he doesn't have any ne'amanas. So the truth is, we could say that's true according to Tosfos. According to Rashi, we have to figure it out. Right? According to Rashi, maybe he actually does have ne'amanas. So it really prompts the question of what is the nature of the p'tur of Kofar HaKol? Is it that the person has ne'amanas? Or is it simply that Kofar Bakal is excluded from the Gzeiros HaKasav of the Shvua and is just not a part of his din? So, working from there, we then discuss the other half of the scenario, the idea that there is a Chiyuv of the Modim Mitzvahs. So again, according to Tosfos, the focus will be because that's what the Pasuk is read to mean. While according to Rashi, it's really about the ha'azah that would have gotten you off of the shvua. So here, we counter that with the svara nishtamute kamishtamu. That maybe the person doesn't want to be chtofot, predict, pretend it never happened, but he needs to stall in order to be able to get enough money, so this will keep it going, so it's not such a ha'azah. So the exemption that would have come from ha'azah is mitigated. And we discussed a little bit the question of what about situations where ha'az is not such a factor, something Tosfos brings up. What about situations where shtamute is not such a factor, as we saw a little bit. All of that, a part of that equation. So then we started to discuss as well. So what does it mean, the whole idea that a modim mikzas is chayiv in the shvua. We saw that Tosus in Subis calls it something comparable to Gilgul shvua, that we impose the shvua because he's already on the table, so to speak. While the Ritva essentially says that it's reglayim ladavar, that once you've acknowledged that there was a loan in the first place, or that there is some type of existing open account between the two of you, so now it's reglayim ladavar to say that there is more. And that got us into the question, taking it a little bit further, how do we view this idea of modav mikzas being chayiv? Is it because you are somehow strengthening his position? You are somehow shifting the balance of credibility a little bit away from you and a little bit more towards the claimant? Right, we saw Tosus on Daf Dalet over here use the expression nira kemishaker. But we could also say, whether we want to go so far as to say it looks like you are lying, but it does give a little bit more credibility to the Toveya, in which case maybe the focus is specifically that you agree to the claim, as opposed to the Gzeres HaKasuv, which maybe doesn't focus on the claim at all. And maybe it's just the bottom line. If the person says you owe him $100 and you say back $50, so that becomes Miktas HaMama. And how you got to that doesn't necessarily have to matter as much.
It's possible to subcategorize and say that the Ritva and the Tosus and the Dalet are slightly different, in that when we say reglayim ladavar, it's strengthening the other guy's claim, versus Tosus and the Dalet is saying nila shel shaker is sort of weakening your...
Yes, I think while we could put them both under the title of shifting the balance of credibility, I think you're definitely right in terms of that focus, and I would say even more blatantly, that you don't have to come on to the expression nira kemishaker according to the Ritva. That the Ritva isn't necessarily saying at all that it looks like you're lying, but he's saying that there's what to talk about. Now, since we know that you owe him something, so then we have a little bit of a basis to say there's something going on here, and therefore we should require some kind of a shua. So then we went on to talk a little bit about some of the issues of vague tainas that don't have monetary numbers attached to them. If you say that I gave you a wallet full of money, and the guy responds back, well, take whatever's in the wallet, it's yours, so there's no sums being specified. So there the Mishnah in Shvua says that that's not considered to be a chi of Shvua, you're a pater that. And we talked about different views of why that's not called the modav mikzas, along the lines of these two possibilities. And then where we left off, so we started to talk about the fact that there is a requirement that the Rishonim have, the Ramban, the Ran and the Chidushim to Shavuos makes the statement that you have to have the Tviya before the Kfira, that the person has to, before the Hodah, before the combination, that the person has to come make his claim first, and then you have to respond with a Modi Mixas in order to be Chayav. If you acknowledge half the debt before he makes the formal claim, so then that's not called modav mikzas. So we mentioned that that could really be explained according to both approaches. And in terms of the Gzeres HaKasuv, so we could say, all right, that's the Tzuras HaDvarim, that's what the Gzeres HaKasuv was talking about, that first there is a claim and then there is a response. So we need to have it in the right order in order for the Gzeres HaKasuv to apply. But it works even better if we say that it's about strengthening his tviya, that he comes and makes the claim, so then it's only if after that you acknowledge a part of it that you're doing anything to strengthen his tviya. So we then started to say, and this we really rushed, so just to explain it a little bit more, so there is a Gemara that appears in a number of places. It appears in Bava Metzia. It appears in Daf Hei, if anyone got that far. It appears in Bava Kama. It appears in Shavuos. It appears all over the place. Of Tainu Bechitin V'Hodlo B'Sa'ara. Alright, so let's say I come to Nathaniel and I say that you owe me a certain amount of bushels of wheat. And he says, no, I don't owe you any wheat at all. happens to be, I do owe you some sa'arim. So the conclusion of the machlokas seems to be that he is completely pasuk. That essentially he was a kofar akol regarding what I stated. So he's off the hook. And the fact that he did acknowledge owing me something, it's not something that I brought up. It's a different thing. Now, if we were talking about value, let's say the chitin is worth $100, the sarin is worth $50. So if I had said, you owe me $100 of value, and you would say back, you owe me $50 of value, so that would have sounded like a straight modi b'mikzas. And he should have been chayiv in a shvuah. So what's the difference here? How come if he doesn't say 50 to my 100, but he says sarin to my chitin, how come he's pater then? So this was a topic of machlokas among the Rishonim. At the Rush in Baba Kama, quotes from the Yad Rama, that essentially this hodah is not really meaningful. Because it could be that this is also some kind of a joke or some kind of a stalling technique or some type of a flippant response. That here, if I'm saying you owe me X and he says I owe you Y, so he's essentially not really relating to me at all. While the Rosh himself, his other Rishonim, a lot of other Rishonim favor a different approach, that the issue is, it's as if I am Mocha when me and Nathaniel are doing the transaction here. So if Nathaniel believes that that he owes me Sa'uru, but I'm not asking for them, so then it's as if I'm mochel on that. Now you have to understand why that is. The Rosh himself questions that svara, because just because I don't mention it as if I'm mochel, so everyone has to only bring up all of their tainas at the same time, otherwise they're mochel on whatever they happen not to mention in this conversation. So shtika to what though? I mean, I spoke first. Right, but I spoke, that's shtika kodah, so therefore he should be chayiv in it. That means I agree with him. But in any event, my shtika was before he spoke. Right? So the fact that I didn't mention it, why is it relevant? So maybe I'll be timing at a different time. So the Rosh says, to work within this pshat, you have to say that it's probably kind of a very specific type of scenario where we have set times for this loan and set times for this transaction, and we do business at these set points, and during that period I came and said, here's what you owe me, and I didn't mention this sa'orim, so therefore it's as if I am mochel. So some point out that the difference here between the Yad Rama and the Rush and others is, where is the problem? Where is the lack? And according to the Yad Rama, the deficiency is in the hodah. That maybe it's not a genuine hodah. It's just a way of giving me a hard time. So in order for Moda B'miktzas to kick in, you need a real hodah. And perhaps that's not happening here. While, according to the Rush and others, there's something lacking on my end. I'm not really being toveya of these sorrows. So if the whole function of a modi b'miktzas is to strengthen my tviya, if I don't have a tviya in the first place on this item, so then there's nothing for you to strengthen. You follow? That makes sense, more or less? So that could potentially be the issue over there, that maybe the reason why this case is not a straight-out modi b'miktzas, have to figure out what's missing. Is it the hodah that's missing, or is it the claim that's missing? Maybe that's the machlokas that these Rishonim have. On the one hand, the Yad Rama saying it's a bad hodah, and the Rosh and others saying it's a bad tviya. Now, this could also correlate to a few other questions. What would you say if, Michael, I said to you, I lent you $100, and you owe me $100, therefore? And you were to say back, I don't owe you $100. I happen to have $50 of yours. And those $50 wasn't a loan. It was a bikaron. I've been watching these $50 for you. So what would you say? Is that a mozev mixas? You chayv a shuv in that case? What do you think? What does anyone think? Is that considered to be a mozev mixas? So strictly speaking, Brian, you want
to
comment then?
Well, maybe, like, according to the Russian, the claim is bad. There's no claim here because you're not really, he's the money that, I know, sorry, I guess the other way, you have the money, the hodah, there's no hodah here saying that this money I don't owe it to. But it's,
okay, that's one way to look at it. Daniel?
You're not making the same claim that the lender is.
Right. So what's the significance of that? So if you're not acknowledging his claim, or you're not correlating to that claim.
It doesn't have that.
So that seems to be an issue. So this was actually a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid. That the Rambam says this is considered to be motive mixas. It's interesting because the whole issue seems to be really one of svara, because if you look at the Rambam's lashon, I'll give you an updated list tomorrow so you can look up some of the things that you haven't had a chance to be given yet. That the Rambam says that this was the teaching of his Rebbeim, that this was the case, that this is considered to be Modav Mixas, and that's where his Das is noted. That's what he thinks is true, that this is considered to be Modav Mixas. Does it?
Isn't there a case of Halach?
Oh, so we'll have to talk about Halach in a second and how that's different than Halach. See, Halach is all kind of, well, we'll explain Halach in a minute, then we'll come back to these questions, see if it's like that. Essentially, the Rambam says that this is a case of Modin Mitzvah. And the Ravid disagrees. And the Ravid is similarly mysterious. The Rambam says it's a tradition from his Rebbeim, and the Ravid says he's got a reason for disagreeing, but this is not called Modin Mitzvah. So they both have a little bit of mystery in the way they lay out this issue. But essentially, that's the debate. And the Shulchan Aruch, it's interesting, Paskins like the Rambam in this, even though a lot of the other Rishonim defended the Ravid, and the Shach has a whole discussion about this, why it is that the Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rambam against the other Rishonim and against the Ravid, and the Shach ends up voting like the Rambam for his own reasons. Now, his own reasons we can understand based on what we've been saying so far. Right, that we have maintained, we haven't mentioned it yet today, but yesterday we were talking about the fact that the Shach seems to be consistent with Tosis in essentially seeing Modav Mixas as primarily Xeris HaKasiv driven. So essentially, you tell me I owe you money, and I say I owe you half the money. That's called Modav Mixas. It's all about the mama. It's all about the money. So therefore, in such a scenario, that's still happening. You claim 100. I claim 50, it's a modem of mix-ups. However, if you believe that it's about strengthening the taina of the Tobeya, as Nathaniel pointed out, so here, this guy is claiming a loan, and the respondent is saying there was no loan, I deny the whole loan. Happens to have been a picado. So that, I'll tell you, you get half for the picado. Now, it's also interesting if you want to get into the questions of Ha'aza and Bifnei Balchovo. So here also, it's an interesting question. If you say that I have your money or I have some of your money, but I don't acknowledge the chesed at all, so then again, it gets into the question of what the Ha'aza is based on. But it's an interesting permutation. So that could also perhaps be affected. But in any event, that debate seems to also correlate to this question. Are we interested in a hodah on the mama? Or are we interested in a strengthening of the claim? This could also affect an issue that kind of also relates to what we spoke about at the beginning. To what extent can we bring in modav mixas to other areas of halacha? Let's say, for example, this is a question that was discussed in the Sefer Gidrei Mishpat that we mentioned a little bit yesterday. Let's say, for example, somebody comes, a woman claims against a man that he was ma'anes her. that he raped her. And the nafkamina is that the Torah gives her a schus that if she wants to, he has to marry her if that's the case. So let's say she comes with such a claim. It's not a monetary claim, but that's what she maintains, that that's what happened. And he maintains, well, you're half right. He says, I tried. But in the end, I didn't succeed. So it didn't actually happen. I wanted to, but it didn't actually happen. So would you apply a svar of modem mixas there? Now, what would the nafkamina be if there's modem mixas? There's no shvua really that correlates, but maybe somehow in the evaluation of factors, should we credit her story more because of the hodah b'mixas? So maybe that depends on how you relate to the whole idea of modem mixas. Right? Should we say that it's about exeris akasav by mama? In which case it's really only limited to these monetary matters that the Gemara tell us about? Or should we say that it's a general concept that if you're Moda, part of a Taina, so now that person's Taina becomes stronger, and therefore that becomes more meaningful than it would have been otherwise. I think Adam was close call, but I think it was Adam and then John.
I think in that case, though, wouldn't she be believed because she's a Cheskas Aguf?
Well, what does the Cheska Guf do? What kind of a Cheska Guf does she have?
Meaning she would know he was Ba'anis or...
Yeah, but she has to make the court believe it.
She could be lying.
She could be lying.
But then again, doesn't she have that Chazaka, though?
Well, what kind of a Chazaka?
Isn't there a concept of the Cheska Guf where she would know that...
She would know it herself. We don't really question if she knows it. The question is if she has credibility for it. So she has to make the case that this happened. So what points does she have for that? This is close to a chazak in the sense that when he acknowledges it, so one could make the case, if we want to give credibility to this, that it's something like a chazaka meikara, so to speak, in a very rough sense. But that's only if he says something. You know, a chazaka meikara, what does it normally mean? We talked about it in the context of Cheskas Marakama. Right, a chazaka meikara, let's say we don't have anything to go on here. But we know that yesterday it was 1-1. So chazaka meikara will tilt things in that direction. Not that chazaka meikara really proves anything, because things change. So it's possible something was true yesterday, and it's not true today. It's just a little bit of a tilt. So you could make a case that if we're going to have significance given to his hodah that he tried, maybe it's comparable to a chazaka meikara, which would be a chiddush and would only be true if he said so. But if he doesn't say anything, so then she doesn't really have any inherent credibility. He also, you know, points out this could also come up. So, for example, what about knossos? So when it comes to knossos, so nowadays we don't have knossos. All the knossos that are in the Torah, so we don't impose them. Why not? Because despite what you may find out from the registration office, well, we don't have smicha. There's no smicha b'zman hazeh. That the Rabbanim nowadays don't have a tradition for Moshe Rabbeinu, and you need smicha in order to impose a knas. So we only, bezdins today, they only deal with mamonos, meaning they only deal with actual monetary obligations, such as I borrowed money, I lent money, I did work for you, I damaged your stuff, etc., etc. But all of the knossos of kefil, etc. So we don't have that nowadays. In the time of the Gemara, so when those were adjudicated by the courts, we had a rule that modeh b'knas is pater. Right? Which would mean that if I come forward and acknowledge a debt, so then of a fine, of a penalty, so then I'm pater, because a knas only works if it's imposed by bezdin. Now here's an interesting distinction, right? That's basically the opposite. Mammon and Knas are basically opposite systems in this way. Because if I borrowed money from you, or if I hired you to do work for me, the like, so I have a monetary debt from that perspective, so then my acknowledgement is invaluable. So we say that Hodas Baldin Kamei Aidin Dami. So if I acknowledge I have a debt to you that's a monetary debt, so then that rules the day. But if it's a knas, if it's punitive, so then It's the opposite. If I acknowledge it, I'm pater, because it has to be imposed from Bezdin. So we say basically the opposite logic, mode b'knas pater, and when it comes to mammon, your hoda is what makes you chayiv. And that's put, that puts mammon, that puts knas, in a category together with all kinds of punishments. You know, when it comes to an onus of Bezdin, let's say it comes to getting executed. So a person who can't come to Bezdin and testify against himself, and we say, ain odam mesam atzmo rasha. So it's essentially opposite systems when it comes to hodah. So nowadays, we don't impose knossos at all. However, there is a possibility that if there's tfisa, that if there is a theoretical chiyuv knas, and the person who deserves the knas is holding on to the item, or grabs hold of the item, that maybe Bezdin may not reverse it. So then it becomes an interesting question. So what if the person is mode the knas? So then, nowadays that has no effect, being mode the knas, because there's no official knas adjudication at all. So therefore, that's not going to pat you. So maybe it should be mechayiv. Maybe it should do the opposite. Not in the sense of actually having to pay it, but in the sense that the other guy grabs it from you, so then he's allowed to keep it. So you follow that? It was a little bit of a complicated back and forth. Right? In the time of Bezdin, in the time when there was full smuchim, so if you acknowledge a chiyuv knas, you'd get off the hook. But nowadays, since the Bezdin doesn't get involved with the knas, so there's no such concept of modi b'knas putter in practice. So if you acknowledge the knas, so then it becomes held against you. Now, what do you mean held against you if Bezdin doesn't collect the knas anyway? For the purposes of tvisa, if the other guy decides to grab it and you acknowledge it, so then maybe Bezdin is not going to undo it. So then you could raise the question, so then should you apply modi b'miksas to a knas? And should we say that if you acknowledge a part of it, that impacts your credibility on the rest of it? Which all goes back to, again, a question, are we focused on Xeris Arkasiv, Kihuzeh, or is this basically a svara that you strengthen the claim of the Tovei? Now at this point, if you know the Mesim Atzmo Rasha, so Rashi Maseches Yevamos comments that essentially the hodah of a person in all of these areas of onshin and knas is essentially nothing. So it sounds like from Rashi, as the author of the Gidrei Mishpat points out, that that's against the suggestion that anything out of a straight monetary chiyuv, your hodah doesn't count for anything. So it seems to be against all of his speculation. However, you could say that maybe that's if there's no tovei, if nobody's coming and demanding anything from you. So then your coming and admitting something has no standing in halacha. But if there is a tovei, if somebody's coming with a claim, and you acknowledge something to do with that claim, maybe it's still true that the tviya does something to strengthen his position. And maybe we'll have to take that into consideration. So all of that goes to this question again of what does modi miktsas accomplish? Is it something real that means the other person is actually more believable, has rabbayim l'davar, or maybe like you're more likely to be lying? Or is it not so much built on that, but it's essentially Xeris Arkasiv of Kihuzeh, and therefore we're not going to transfer it to any other area of halacha? On the one hand, that'll be the limitation. But on the other hand, we will apply it, and as long as the person is moda on the mamon, even if he doesn't do anything to acknowledge the tviya of the person bringing the claim on it. So far, so good? Everybody following, more or less? Should I repeat anything? Okay, so now let's, for the next few minutes, look at how that relates to Halach. So Halach, again, is really its own full sugya. You could spend many hours talking about it. We'll just try to get a little bit of a taste of it. So the concept of Halach, this is also Reb Chiya's statement. So we mentioned Reb Chiya Kamaisa yesterday. This is Reb Chiya Bas Raisa. The Reb Chiya's Kamaisa statement, his first statement, was that Edim should have the effect of Modiv and Mitzvahs. So here Reb Chiya says on Daf Dalet that Halach is also considered to be a Modiv and Mitzvahs. What does Halach mean? Halach means that let's say a person comes to you and says, let's say I go to Elisha and they say, Elisha, you owe me $100. And Elisha says, no, it's not $100, it's $50. Okay, what does it sound like so far? What a mixas. However, he says, and not only is it $50, but here they are. $50 are here. You can just take them. So that immediacy, that having the $50 available right now, so that maybe should be viewed differently. Maybe that's not, I'm acknowledging a debt, but on some level, like you're going around the debt. You're saying, here's your money, you have it, that's it, and I'm not chayiv to you essentially anything. So Rav Chiya's position is, that's no different. That's also a mode of mixing. But Rav Sheshis's view is no. Such a person is potter. How do we paskin on this question? So we paskin on this question that a halach is potter. It's not obvious from our Gemara, but it comes out essentially that that's the case, that there is a fundamental difference between halach and modiv mixas, and halach is potter. In general, again, I'll give you a full list tomorrow, but you should look at the first siman in Pei Zayin, first sif in Pei Zayin in Shulchan Aruch. There's a long mechaber. He goes through all the basics of this principle of kofra kol modim mixas, and halach is right there in the very beginning. Now, on the one hand, it's all part of one sentence, essentially, in the Shulchan Aruch. Kofra kol pater min haTorah, yichayev midrabanan mitshvua shvuas hases, modim mixas, you are chayev shvua, and halach is not called modim mixas. This is all essentially one sentence in the Shulchan Aruch. So what is the difference? Why should halach be any different than modim mixas? Anyone want to start the ball rolling? What's the difference? Essentially, I'm acknowledging half the debt. Jonathan?
You say modim mixas comes from exeris akasus, and it only applies to a very, very specific situation. Modim mixas. If there's any real nuance there, let's say here it is, that might not apply anymore than exeris akasus.
Okay, I think that's true, but you'd still have to explain how does this deviate from the model, because something that nuance has to be identified somehow. What is it that makes this not modim mixas, Aaron?
Well, generally, modim mixas is when you're admitting, and when you're being tovea something, and you're admitting part of what you're being tovea. But in this case, since you're paying immediately, so you no longer have tovea on you, because you're paying back right now.
Right, so that's very much a possibility. We'll see if that's indeed the case. If you look at Rashi, right, so Rashi starts the ball rolling on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. Where this position comes up. So what does Rashi say? Right, it's a short Rashi, but it could be very significant. It's towards the bottom of the page here. V'heilach. Lo hosasim. V'hein sholcha b'kol makom shehem. Yeah, you want your money? I didn't spend it. It's right there. It's yours. Take it. Now this Rashi prompts a lot of discussion. For a little bit of a side reason, we'll just mention it. This is also the kind of thing you could spend a lot of time going back and forth about, but we'll just give some of the background. So there are some Rishonim, such as the Ran in Shavuos, the beginning of the sixth parak of Shavuos HaDayanim. So the Ran says from this Rashi that according to Rashi's opinion, Halach only applies to a Pikadon, doesn't apply to a Halva. Do you know why he reads Rashi that way? Not everyone reads Rashi that way. But he reads Rashi that way because he understands that there is a concept, the Gemara says in Masechet Kedushin, called Milva Lehotza Nitna. So roughly speaking, what does Milva Lehotza Nitna mean? It's meant to be spent. And therefore what?
You give back different money.
You give back different money, right? So essentially, one of the core differences between Milva and Sheila, if you borrow something, if somebody borrows my car, So the idea is, hopefully, that he will return the same car. Or a better car, right? At least the same car or better. So hopefully, the idea, well, if a better car, that will change the dynamics a little bit. So I still do hope for that, but let's just to keep the situation more comparable. So the idea is that he's essentially borrowing this item, watching the item, and returning it, hopefully, close to the way it was. But when it comes to money, so if I lend somebody money, as opposed to asking to watch the money, but if I lend them the money, so the expectation is I give him a $100 bill. He's not going to give me back the same $100 bill. There's no reason for that. It's not going to help him at all. It's not going to help me at all. Presumably, he wants the money so that he can spend it. So I'll give him $100. He'll buy groceries. And then next week, he'll give me five $20 bills. Next week, he'll pay me back with different money. So therefore, when Rashi says, lo hotzasim, so what is Rashi talking about? Okay, I didn't spend the money, so it's still available to you? So who cares? But if milva lo hotzasim, now the moment he gave it to me, it was already as if it was spent. Because already the debt is I'm going to give him back something else. So there's no significance to the fact that I haven't spent his money per se. What's the difference between Stam having 520s in my wallet then? So the Ran assumes that Rashi would have to limit this to Pikadon. And the other Rishonim didn't agree. The Ran himself quotes from the Gaonim that they didn't agree. But this was a whole discussion. Others didn't read Rashi that way. So it's a whole question, what exactly are we interested in? It's a little bit of a Metzias question. What do we want when we say Halach? Do we focus on the fact that this object is available to you right now, that it's actually present, that it's accessible, that it hasn't changed since when you gave it to me? This is a little bit of a debate in the Rishonim. Shulchan Aruch says, by the way, that if the Dayanim suspect that he's just playing a game with me, and that he's saying this because he knows that it will patter him from a Shavuah, so he's basically stalling a little bit, but the Dayanim realize that that's going on, so then he's chayiv in a shvua daraisa, he's chayiv in a shvua on a Torah level, essentially that halach disappears in that case. He has to actually make the money available right away. So what exactly is being accomplished with this halach? So you could look at it from a couple of ways. Right? You could say, and essentially, this is perhaps what Rashi sounds like also. Right? Because now that we saw that first Rashi, so now look at the second Rashi. Rashi is a little bit, the second Rashi is also very significant, perhaps more significant for what we're interested in here. Right, so Rashi is explaining the opinion of Reb Chiya that he's chayev. So Rashi says, Chayev lishav al ashar. V'lo amrinan hani dekamodile begavayu. That that I am acknowledging, ho visnayu beinayu kemandin nukul luhudami. Since they are available and they exist, so it's as if you have them already. Ela kishar modi v'miksasu v'chayev. So working off of his explanation of the other opinion, that you're chayev, how does Rashi seem to understand the idea of halach? What could you have said, or what do we indeed say, those of us who agree with Rosh Hashanah, that you're patur? What's the nature of the patur? That you're essentially saying that if I am giving you the money right now, it's as if I'm not being modet to anything. Because I immediately took away the debt. So I'm not going to agree I owe you anything. You have the $50. And the $50 difference that you're asking from me, I'm not admitting. So essentially, you revert to being a kofar akol. Jonathan?
Considering this guy doesn't even believe that he's owed that little, that he thinks he's owed, let's say, $100, is he forced to accept it when someone gives it to him?
So that, you know, that raises interesting questions also. So
denying the guy.
Right, so the question is, he may still be Piron Bal Korcho, It's a whole machlokes in the Gemara, whether they say Shmei Piron or not. But it's an interesting question whether that makes a difference. Because either way, whether he actually takes it or not, so to get to the whole question of whether we're interested specifically in the act of Piron, or just that the individual is making it available, is an interesting question also. What exactly are we focused on? And this is also a machlokes in the Rishonim, and it's a machlokes in the Shulchan Aruch versus the Ramah. The Shulchan Aruch says, in that whole first sentence over there with Modim Mikzas and Halach, that if a person offers a mashkon, that doesn't do it. And if, and the other opinion is the Ramah, it's machlokes in the Rishonim as well, the Ramah says a mashkon is Halach. So what's that about? Right, what's the significance of a mashkon or the lack of significance of a mashkon? A person offers collateral for this 50. Right, he says, yeah, here's an IOU for the 50. Here's my watch. So what's the significance of that? Or what's the lack of significance? Ellie?
Maybe it gives him a level of nemanus on that 50.
Oh, so is that the issue then? So is it about his nemanus? Or is it about that if you pay back half of the 50, or pay back the half that's a 50, so then you take away any hodah? So it's not really clear what we're looking for. Like in the context of Kiddushin, for example, the Gemara says that if a person wants to be Mekadesh and Isha with a mashkon, says, I don't have a ring, but I'll give you my watch to hold on to until I get you a ring. So then that doesn't work, the Gemara says, because mana ein kan, mashkon ein kan, that you're not giving her anything. And the mashkon is also not hers. So as a actual transferal, the mashkon isn't so significant. But some point out that it's different in the context of Kiddushin, so there isn't actually a chov there. You want to give her a gift in order to create Kiddushin, but you don't actually owe her anything. But maybe if I did owe her money, and I'm giving the mashkon for that, so maybe that would be something more significant. So what exactly is the role of mashkon? How does it relate to the chiyuv? Is part of the question here. Hi?
I don't understand exactly how that alleviates the low. You're admitting to it.
Correct. Oh, so you're saying that about the mashkon, about halach in general.
Yeah.
Right, so setting aside the mashkon problem, so how does halach make a difference? So it sounds like from Rashi, and it happens to be that the Ketzos expresses this opinion as well, in Simon Pei Zayin, that it's considered to be no hodah. That apparently in order for me to be chayiv, I need to be modeh. And here I skip the step of being modeh. I'm eliminating the issue by giving you the half, so now you have no claim on me for that half, so there's no hodah. That in order for the issue of modeh mikzas to kick in, I have to be modeh, and this essentially happening simultaneously to my words of hodah makes it not a hodah, that the hodah essentially is not going to be mechayiv me, even though I'm saying the exact same words I would say together with other words, but I'm saying the exact same words I would say in a mode of mitzvahs, that hodah is not being mechayev me, because I gave him that money. So apparently I need a hodah that's mechayev me in order for it to be considered significant. Hi?
Is that making it totally on the role of Beis Din?
In terms of saying that the hodah has to be mechayev you?
Yeah.
Possibly, and then you could open up another line of thinking. You could say that if I need a hodah that is mechayev rather than I giving it to you, if I do kind of an end run around Beis Din, so then there isn't a context in order for the shvuah to be chal, which makes it comparable to kind of a Gilgul shvuah type of idea, that you need the process to be in effect, and I did an end run. Here I gave you that, I dropped this $50 in your pocket, so now you can't use it against me, and you can't make me be mechayev a shvuah because of that. Now you could say differently. And the Nesivus, in a very short comment, the Nesivus essentially says this. This is in Simon Ayin Hei, in the Chidushim, the Nesivus and Nesivus, and those two commentaries, the Chidushim and the Urim, the Chidushim and the Nesivus. It's in Ayin Hei Tesvav. So the Nesivus says that the reason you're potter with Halach is because you cancel out the Tviya. That now, because you paid this, so he is not considered to be toveya you on this, And therefore, apparently, this flows with our idea that if Moda Mikzas is about strengthening the Tviya, now you're not doing that because you've taken this away from the power of the Tviya.
And that would seem like Jonathan said earlier that that's dependent on him being able to take it or deny it.
Maybe yes, maybe no, because either way, I guess if I, first of all, it is possible that we say that the Piron could work Bal Korcho, but even though, even without that, it's a question of whether it has to actually be considered Piron. If I left it at his doorstep and he doesn't take it, so then it's a question whether that's his problem or my problem. Now, what's interesting, as you mentioned, there are a lot of nuanced sub-issues when it comes to Halach. So, for example, there is a question, is there a Chiluk? Rishonim argue about this point. So first we saw Rashi may possibly make a distinction between Halva and Pikadon, according to the way the Ran read it. But what about Pikadon specifically? So there are some who assume that there's a difference between Halva and Pikadon. It applies to both, but Halva, I have to actually give it to you, otherwise you're not really accomplishing anything. While Pikadon, it's a machlokas Rishonim, whether you have to actually give it, because Pikadon is considered to be in the Rishus of the owner, wherever it is. So I could say, yeah, I have it in the swamp, I have it in the Agam over there, and go get it. And that's still considered to be Halach. So there's a lot of Metzias, there's a lot of details in terms of the actual practice, how Halach plays out, and all of these details are debated among the Rishonim, whether Pikadon requires you to actually hand it over, whether there's a difference, whether how much focus we're putting on the responsibility of the other guy is open to debate. Now, it's also interesting that there are some Rishonim, and this requires really a little bit more understanding, but there are some Rishonim who say that Halach is essentially also subject to the same Ha'aza principle. There's a Tosfos over here that says half of it, because Tosfos raises the question of the bottom Tosfos over here on Dalet Amud Alef. What would you say if somebody could pocket himself with Halach as opposed to Modim Mixas? Or to be Chayiv? So why don't we say the Modim Mixas should also be Pater? Because amigo of Halach. So somebody shown him asked this question. Why don't we say if that's the case? So then Tosfos asked the question more briefly in the last Tosfos over here in Dalet Amud Alef. But some Rishonim say, why don't we say the existence of Halach undermines all of Modim Mixas? Because anyone could just take a nickel and say, yeah, here's a Halach and a nickel, and a pruta, whatever small amount, and that would have potted them. So Modim Mixas, they could have Halach. Migo, they could have Halach. So Tosfos essentially understands here that for those purposes, Halach is kofar akal. Just like we don't say migo, you could have been kofar bakal. Why not? Because that has a problem of ha'aza. So too, Halach is in the same category. Now it takes a little bit of a stretch to understand why, and there are some Rishonim who go further. And the Meiri suggests like this, and says that essentially that's what Halach is based on, that Halach essentially restores things to a kofar bakol kind of situation, because it takes that half off the table. And now you're essentially kofar bakol. And since that's a chutzpah, we assume kofar bakol is a chutzpah. So on the one hand, like Tosfos says, we don't give it to you in the alternative, we don't give you the migo. And the chutzpah itself might be the reason kofar bakol is pater. So too, Halach might be Pater for the same reason. Now it's a little bit less obvious, because when it comes to Kofar Bakol, you're saying, listen, you did me a favor and I owe you nothing. And in the case of Halach, you're saying, I don't owe you anything more than what I'm giving you now. So you're giving him something, so why is that as much of a chutzpah, it's not so clear. Apparently by saying there's no validity to your claim whatsoever, I have narrowed your claim down to something which doesn't exist at all. That itself is considered to be ha'azda as well, and therefore maybe that's where the p'tur comes from. And that's what Tosfos says over here, it doesn't provide you with amigo to get you out of a modim mixas. Okay, So those are, we're almost out of time, so I don't want to carry on too late, so maybe we'll just review what we spoke about. But those are some of the principles. Again, Mod Miktsas we could have spoken about for many more weeks, and Halach we could have spoken about for many more days, but I just wanted to get a basic sense of what some of the issues are, so that we should have some exposure to these concepts. So before I quickly review, do we basically understand everything that was said? Any specific questions? All right, so let's review what we spoke about today. So we spoke about, we went back to the question a little bit of why Kofar HaKol is Pater and why Mod Miktsas is Chayiv. The essential question of the Machlokas between Rashi, who Pater's Kofar HaKol because of the Ha'aza, and Tosfos, who Pater's because of the Gzeres HaKasev. And we focus that question a little bit more by noting that according to Tosfos, the Kofar has no Ne'amanus per se, just doesn't have a Chiyuv Shvua that the Torah put on a Mod Miktsas, while according to Rashi, the Kofar has actual Ne'amanus, or at least Ne'amanus for purposes of Shvua. And that could affect other areas of Halacha. We mentioned the question of the Mishnah Melech against the Beis Shmuel and the Rivash, that they said that when it comes to a father denying paternity, that the Torah believes him to deny the paternity, and therefore we don't even put a Shvua the Rabbanan on him. And the Mishnah Melech says, well, what about a Kofar Bakal? Torah believes him too, but we put a Shvua the Rabbanan. So we mentioned, it all depends on how you understand it. Does the Torah really believe the Kofar Bakal like the father and the son? Or does the Torah just not impose a Chiyuv Shvua so Chazal can come in and do it, but there's no inherent Ne'amanus on him? And then we talked about the basic question of what does Mod Miktsas mean and what does it do? Does it essentially, first of all, flow from the Gzeres HaKasev or flow from the Svar? And if it flows from the Gzeres HaKasev, maybe it applies any time you acknowledge a part of the debt, even if the Svaras don't exactly match. And that essentially it means as long as the Gzeres HaKasev will fit in because you have been mowed down part of the money, it's going to apply. Well, if we focus more on the logic of Ha'aza, Nishtamute, etc., so then those Svaras would have to be more relevant. And presumably, I would have to endorse the tviya to some extent of the person coming against me, not just the money, not just the sum, but also the claim itself. And we discussed that in the context of the view that Rishonim have, that the tviya has to come before the hodah, and that could be explained according to both understandings, either because that's what the Gzeres HaKasev demands, or because it's only in such a case that you are strengthening the tviya. We talked about the din of Toveya Bechitin Behodolo Besarim. That person is Pater if he admits a debt of a different object that's worth less. Why is that not a Mod Miktsas? So we discussed the different views in Rishonim that either it's not considered a real Hodah, it seems to be the view of the Yad Ramah who says that maybe you're just pushing the guy off or giving the guy a hard time, or maybe it's a lack in the Tviya, the Rush's ultimate view. And other Rishonim that essentially the claimant is being mochel on that because he's not bringing it up, so it's as if there's no tviya to work with for Mod Miktsas to kick in. And then we talked also about the question of Machlokas, the Rambam, and the Ravid. What happens if you admit to the number, but you say it's for a different reason, you say it's pikadon rather than halva? The Rambam says that that is Mod Miktsas. And the Shach eventually comes to that position as well, which seems to fit with saying it's Gzeres HaKasev and you're being mowed to the mammon regardless of the claim. While the Ravid mysteriously objects, and a lot of other Rishonim agree, and perhaps because you're not strengthening the Tvi at all, because you're coming at it from a different claim, you're saying there was no loan, there was only a pikadon. And then we got into the subject of Halach, the Machlokas and the Gemara between Reb Chiya and Reb Sheshes. That Reb Chiya says Halach, just like Reb Chiya said earlier that Eidim is like Hodah. So it says also Halach also fits into Mod Miktsas. Don't think anything is different if you say here's the money right away. And Reb Sheshes' view, which seems to be the view that wins certainly in Shulchan Aruch, is that Halach is Patur, that there is somehow a fundamental difference between Halach and Mod Miktsas. So we had to try to figure out what is that difference and how does that difference play out. So first of all, we saw Rashi who says that he translates Halach as saying, I haven't spent it at all, and it's here, which prompted the Ran to say, therefore, Rashi would not apply it to Halva or Milvalot Sa'an Nitna. against other Rishonim, the Ran says, who do apply it to Halva, and other Rishonim read Rashi that way also. And the next Rashi goes on to say that what Halach would mean is that it's as if that money has already been collected, and therefore I'm not being mowed to anything to you. And that's indeed how the Ksos understands that there's no Hodah here, that the Hodah would require that I actually acknowledge your claim, and here I'm going around your claim. And then we had a little bit of a discussion about, does that put a strong role, strong focus on the role of Beis Din? Is it that it has to be specifically a Hodah that is Mechayev you, and this isn't Mechayev you because you're paying off the debt already, so there's no Chiyuv, and therefore is it closer to the Gilgal Shvuah kind of idea? So we talked about that a little bit. And perhaps the other view is the view that the Nesivos expresses, that there's no Tviya here, that essentially you negated the person's Tviya by paying off this part of it right away. And Modim Mixas is about strengthening the Tviya, and that is lacking here. Now, by the way, so once you give these two different ways of understanding why Halach is Pater, so if you want to try to figure out what's the svar of the Machlokas between Chiyah and Rav Sheshes, so why is it that Rav Chiyah doesn't agree? So it could be any way along this route. It could be that if you believe that it's about Tviya, so it could be that Rav Chiyah believes that Tviya is just as strong. You know, as some of us pointed out, we're not really sure why it should functionally be different. If you acknowledge the basic existence of the original Halva, so then maybe that is strengthening the Tviya, maybe that's Rav Chiyah's position. Or if you focus on the Hodah, like Rashi and the Ksos do, so maybe again, Rav Chiyah disagrees on that front. Maybe he does consider it to be a Hodah, and therefore it's no different than a standard mode of Mikzas. And then we talked also about the Ha'azah component. We mentioned that essentially what seems to happen is that Halach basically equates itself to Kofar Bakal. Since you take this other part of the debt off of the table, so now essentially you're no different than a normal Kofar Bakal because you deny everything the person is claiming. And that has ramifications in both directions. It could be that that's why Halach is Pater in the first place, because essentially it's considered to be just as chutzpahdik as a kofar bakal. Apparently to say that I don't owe you anything more than what's in front of you is somehow comparable to saying I don't owe you anything on that level. And at least what Tosfos and Arsukya says is that it also works that we don't use amigo from Halach. And we don't say that if you are moda b'mixas, well, since you could have done a Halach and you would have gotten off, so we'll get you off. The same way we don't say a kofar bakal could have gotten you off and we'll get you off. For that reason, we don't apply it to Halach either. Okay, so what's left on our agenda now? So how many weeks of shiur do we have before the semester's over?
Two. Three.
I'm really fly. Do we have three or two? It's a big difference. Wow. So we also have to have time.
It says on the calendar that starting the 25th is the final day. So
what I'd like to do, certainly for this part, is that we should...